Welcome to the Malcontents. This is an experimental podcast from Tom
and Sean, and from the corner of a spacious in the Lower East Side, where Tom and I are going to talk about all the content and journalism and internet things that we're obsessed with and we talk about to each other all the time, and we figured we would love to get more input.
And maybe this will work, maybe it won't, but we'll try it out. Come on, agendas. Sean, you're probably the most famous person on the internet for advocating the phrase, always own your own platform. Talk to me about it.
So, if you talk to any media person who is quote-unquote smart, they'll tell you to leverage channels and platforms like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Google via SEO. And that's the way to get the high audience quickly. And that works in the short term, which is especially good if you have VC money and you need to hit some metrics. But I think we've seen over... Look, social media has existed for 10 years now. I think the cycle's pretty clear. People over-leverage these platforms to grow audience. Platforms change rules out from under them.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second. You need the channels.
Right.
How are you going to grow an audience without being on Facebook?
Right.
Is that what you're suggesting? Are you saying, you know, when you say always own your own platform, does that mean not being on Facebook? What does that mean?
It means using the platforms to... We need a word for this, right? The social media sites to bring people back to your platform. When I think a lot of people are content to have the audience just stay on the platform, the social media platform.
So and we see this in the metrics, right? We see people reporting the offsite metrics as audience.
Right. You know, our videos got a bajillion views and half of them are on Facebook. And I don't think it's controversial to say, hey, you should put things on your own site. But the business case is what I don't think people... There's not many other kinds of business where if you build them on the back of other businesses, like we think it's a good idea, right? Like, I can't think of a real-world example, but, like, if your business depended entirely on, like, Borders and Barnes & Noble existing,
right,
and that was your entire – to stand outside Borders and Barnes & Noble, you were selling things.
Right.
That's a bad business, because the moment those businesses go under, which they did, you'd be screwed. And that's what we're doing with our content sites.
But it's seductive, right? These platforms are huge, and they deliver. It's like you go – that's why so many publications shifted to Medium. Because Medium offered them something appealing and said, hey, we can build your audience. You'll have more views.
But what happened?
Well, insert garbage fire number one. Medium, you know, pivoted, as startups famously do.
Right, because like when you start a publication, the thing you are really trafficking is a relationship with a group of people.
Right.
And you should own that relationship. You should be in full control of that relationship. You shouldn't let anyone step in and mess with that relationship.
So here's where I think some of the problem starts. I think the problem starts with the essence of a page view. Understanding a hit to your website, right? In the old school parlance.
1997?
Page. Yeah. Right? It's like what we're measuring is a visit, which is so radically different than a reader or a loyal, engaged fan. Right? And we have such poor metrics to understand, to distinguish between, hey, this article got a million views versus this article was read by 50% of our diehard audience.
I don't think it's a metrics thing. It's what business are you in? Like, how do you actually make your money?
But I think the business models that we're a fan of start with something that isn't just page views.
Right.
But then if you're stuck measuring page views,
the metrics influence the behavior.
The things...
Or the metrics you're tracking.
Yeah, things become linked when they shouldn't be. Right.
Right. And it's kind of weird that we celebrate people saying, oh, I got a billion views on my video. And we're like, great. I kind of wish we were like, what are your profit margins on this?
Right.
And they're thinner than... Like, audience size doesn't equal more money. It's not a linear relationship.
Right.
And we act like it is. And I think that's...
So here's a question for you. Let's say you're working... Let's say a publisher came to you and said, hey, Sean, we want you to do some consulting. We think that we are over-relying on Facebook. We have a lot of views on the channel.
Right.
What do we do about that?
So I think you... Like, what's the conversion they're after?
Right.
And that's what it depends on. And I would say almost in every circumstance, the conversion you're after can be achieved via email, almost always.
Which I think is actually a good point, which is I think a lot of media properties, a lot of content itself is one step above an email sign up, right?
Like
a lot of content is about driving you to sign up for email.
Right.
We see that. I mean, I think Quartz has done a good job with this recently with their Quartzy email newsletter. Which has built a kind of almost like a separate media brand within the company driven off email. That's such a better relationship with the audience than building a Facebook channel.
Right, but Quartz still like is selling advertising against that email, right? It's just another bucket they just happen to control. And I think rather than selling access to the audience, when possible, you should sell things that help the audience.
Right.
And Quartz is in a weird spot. What do we have? We have 5 minutes.
We're about to hit the 5 minute mark.
That's the end of round one.
All right, we'll wrap it up then.
Okay, hasty ending. We now know these things have to be 5 minutes, so we're going to keep it tight. Tom, thing you're obsessed with, every page is a landing page. What does that mean?
So, riffing off the previous segment on social media, all of our content is delivered to us now in contextless environments. We see an article in our Facebook feed, we see an article in our Twitter feed. It comes at us and it looks like everything else. And this is all wrapped up with the idea that the homepage is dead. This idea that people don't come to a website by going to the homepage and clicking on a category page and then reading an article. They come to it through their Facebook feed.
It's a 2015 take by you.
Right, exactly. that's old news, right? But what the corollary to that, the implication, is that when somebody lands on your content, you cannot assume that they know who you are or they know what the website is.
Right.
And riffing off your point about owning the platform, you want people to know who you are. You want people to stick around. You want people to read more content. You want people to take an action, ultimately, even if that's just clicking an ad, God forbid. You want people to do something. And I think that there is an oversight, a lot of media publications and outlets and sites miss, which is that they don't prominently enough state their mission. They don't prominently enough state who they are and what they're about and what they write about and why. And I think you have to do that on every single page. Every page is a landing page, right? So somebody lands on an article, you just wrote the article today, there should be something on that page, some cue, some link, some section, which it could be a byline, right? It could be like by an author section that just talks about, hey, this is what we're about. This is what we do. Good example is, I think it was Fusion, I forget the brand now, but they started a publication dedicated to role-playing games, which is something that I would be interested in.
Right.
And yet, when I landed on a single article on that site, it took me a long time to put that together. Yeah. I had to do the work to be like, what is this article that I'm reading? I think I came to it from Hacker News, right? So I come to this article completely fresh, I don't know what the site is, I read the article, I like it, and then so what?
So the idea being, I'm not typing in boardgamesite.com in my URL anymore, where I have the context for what I'm about to say. I'm usually doing something else like Twitter or Facebook, and I'm interrupted, and I go, let me read that. I'm kind of dropped. It's like being dropped into the middle of a dinner party. Everyone's talking about a thing, and you need like that context.
Right.
And you're saying that publishers need every single page to assume that people have no effing clue who you are, what you stand for, how you're funded, how many people write for you, what's your goal, all that stuff.
Right. And you clearly can't shove this in people's faces, right? I'm not talking about like an interstitial that says his. Right. I mean, you know, we'll see. So Teen Vogue, I think, is a good example, right? Teen Vogue has a very loyal,
was a good example.
We'll get to that. It was up until recently. Building a great media brand around a certain kind of politics writing, certain kind of media, certain kind of content. And yet, when you go to teenvogue.com, the homepage, when you go to any random article that isn't one of those kind of established ones that we like, there's no indication that this other stuff is happening. There's no editorial mission that I can find on the site. Why do you exist? And I think you need that on every single page. You need some snippet of that, some teaser of that. And obviously not every user is going to care about it, but the ones that do, right? The 10%, the 5% of readers of that article that are like, hey, what is this site? Oh, Teen Vogue, they're writing cool stuff. Like, I didn't know, what is Teen Vogue about? Like, you want some path for them to follow, some rabbit hole for them to go down.
And especially as we name these publication brands words that have nothing to do with what they're talking about.
Right.
But I think a thing that is like in tension with that is a lot of these sites make money by building a community of people and creating a set of values and language and making everyone feel like part of a group and then doing something with that group, whether it's selling them a course or an event or something like that. If people are reminded on every page they're on about the mission, does it get annoying or tedious? How do you reward the people who are familiar but not punish them with starting them from square one? Because depth is the thing that a lot of publishers can add.
I mean, the simple answer is just having a link to an about page or a editorial mission somewhere in the nav. That would, which is shockingly something that most media publications don't do.
Right.
Right. And I think that you can start there and you can work your way up. You could get more advanced about first-time users versus repeat visitors, logged-in users versus non-logged-in users. There's lots of other cues you could take, but I think a simple one is there. Like, remember, there's a lot of stuff on a web page you don't look at, right? which seems like a weird thing to say. And we're running out of time, so we'll leave it there. But we'll get to that next time.
Glad we solved that problem.
Sean, you tell me you're obsessed with machine-generated content.
Yes. So we read a lot about how robots are going to take all of our jobs, and maybe they will. But we're starting to see some effects of like algorithmically created content, not just the distribution of that content, but how it's created. So an example was the essay that I know you and I both read recently titled Something Is Wrong on the Internet about YouTube videos, about children's YouTube videos that are created just by combining keywords and publishing them. And you're starting to see people create Facebook news stories this way and testing content by just combining random words, seeing what works, and then having a machine or like Mechanical Turk or something, or like some mill of Russians, create all the content and put it out there. And they're gaming, they're finding the weakest link in the algorithms, gaming it and drowning out all the legitimate publishers.
Let me play devil's advocate. Is that a bad thing? Because in the SEO world, machine-generated content has been a no-no for a long time, and Google was good enough to be able to distinguish, so people were punished for not doing it.
Remember Demand Media. It's literally what Demand Media would do, right? They would play keyword...
But where are they now?
Well, that's my point, right? Google figured it out, and the platform and the algorithm that was rewarding this stopped rewarding it.
Right. But the real question is not when will we get content written by robots, because that is already the case.
But what will the platforms do about it?
Well, no, I think actually rather what happens when we have machine-generated content which is good or good enough?
Oh.
Right?
I mean, I'll welcome my robot overlords when that happens.
Right. But I mean, when you can write content that's good enough by robots,
right,
then that opens up a whole different kettle of fish, I think.
Right. And I'm talking less about that because I think right now, like we're seeing this with like the Twitter bot army thing where it appears that not a significant number of Twitter accounts are either bots or people not saying who they are.
Right.
And let's just assume for the sake of argument that they're machine generated. They take a hashtag like Black Lives Matter and just put every possible angle on it. That clouds not only the platform, but like our discourse as a country.
Right.
And I don't think it's like a cat and mouse game where the cats slash the platforms are not even thinking about it.
Right. And I think part of the problem here is that Google solved this by dealing with websites, right? There is kind of a structural limitation to how many websites you can make and how fast you can publish them. And Google itself only rewards websites that have been around a little while.
Right. That's
not 100% true, but for intents and purposes, the mechanics of how Google functions is around sites.
Right.
And sites have to have had some kind of, you know, thing.
Excuse me, can you guys remember how many chargers you may have so I can start clearing these cords?
Yeah, you've done it four?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Or 3:30. Yes, that you guys
would
but we don't.
Okay. Real time.
And back to our regular scheduled programming.
We got interrupted. Anyway, I'm saying...
So it was about sites, right? And I think part of the problem with social media, with Facebook and Twitter in particular, is that we are operating in this contextless environment where a random account can generate content. Because the follow accounts are spoofed, and Twitter and Facebook, I don't think, have developed the sophisticated tools that Google has to distinguish a real site from a fake account.
And why? Right? Yeah, but so why?
Because
the answer, but...
Well, because money, but actually because Google is mostly the same, mostly public information, as in when you Google a keyword and I Google a keyword, the results are mostly the same. That's becoming less and less true, but for the most part is. Whereas a lot of what we're talking about with this content generation is the broad strokes effects of it are invisible. You can see any individual piece of it, but you can't see the whole picture. Whereas at Google, it's a little easier because we can all Google the same keywords and see the same result. I can't look at your Facebook feed. You can't look at my Facebook feed.
Right, right.
So we don't know if we're seeing the same content. We don't know if we're getting exposed to the same content. And we can't see who's got the real stuff and who's got the fake stuff or where it's coming from.
Right. Right. There's like this invisible hand of not the market, but like the algorithm, which we're not even sure how it's affecting us.
Which I think is why the algorithm is so critical as a piece of discourse here, which is that the algorithm, we're obviously personifying it here, the algorithm is the only bit that has the full picture. Whereas with Google, that isn't quite true, right? We can get enough of the picture ourselves by just simply Googling things and seeing what everyone else is seeing.
And I like to be the optimist in me, and I think it's a good place to end, is that the Google ecosystem matured to a point where it like stabilized, where these SEO content farms were washed out. And I'd like to think that Twitter and Facebook will get there eventually, hopefully before the midterms.
Fingers crossed.
Okay, Tom, in our rundown, you are obsessed with Race to the Bottom of Sameness, which sounds like a emo album.
Well, this is my attempt at putting out an album in podcast form. Anyway, everything is shit. There's far too much content is generated that just looks like everything else. And this is part of my problem with Medium.
Literally the design looks like everything
else. Well, the design, but also the content. There's a race to the bottom of people trying to copy everyone else. Of, let me make this thing that seems to work for somebody else and make it look a little bit like it. And you end up with this sea of just mediocre content.
Right.
And I think a lot of it is driven by media publications, and I mean that in the broadest sense, whether it's a brand creating content marketing or a real media publication creating journalism, they don't have a strong enough opinion of who they are or what they're writing about, or critically.
Brand ambiguity.
Yeah, brand ambiguity. They don't know who their audience is. And so they end up failing to create content because they don't know who they're talking to specifically enough.
But so there's two parts here. There's how it looks, and then there's like how it sounds or how it reads. So I think how it looks, I feel like you can put to the side, because I think there's some solved problems in like what is the most readable way to display text on the internet. Like, I think we got it, right? It's pretty much what Medium is.
Yeah, except that we don't. I mean, I dislike Medium, but that's another conversation for another time. Yes, let's get to the heart of it. Let's say everything is designed the same.
Yeah.
So what? You still have a sameness. You still have a sameness of content, of writing, of the aesthetic, of editorial, or whatever you want to call it. It's just things just don't differentiate themselves. So the flip side of that, of course, is there are obviously some people doing this. There's a lot of people doing this, but there's a lot of sameness. I think Growth Lab, you've been responsible for putting out some content which is differentiated. Like, I've seen some pieces on there
that are just
super long and interesting. But even then, I feel like there's a fight sometimes to get past the headline.
Right.
It's like how I grew a six-figure email course from scratch.
Right.
And you're like, I think I've read this post 25 times before. And the differentiation comes in the only way it can, in the content, in the depth of writing and thinking and advice and editorial, which I think, if I'm squinting and being generous, is because maybe you figured out a little bit about who you're writing to and what they want to read.
Yeah, this is actually a good case study because I'm involved, so I know the decision making, but there's a million business websites. They all are kind of skim the surface, like, what does Richard Branson do in the morning? Or here's Elon Musk's 5 hacks for productivity. There's a bajillion of those, but there's not a lot that go one step deeper, so we thought, what if we go 2 steps deeper? And that's kind of the game we're playing. Now, audience is growing, we're confident, whether it'll be the end game, end state of this, who knows, but...
I'm curious, do you use that phrase internally?
What?
Like going two steps deeper? Is that like a kind of codified
I say
cultural thing? Are you guys explicit about that?
Yeah, I'm a little more crass about it. I'm just like, it's not shitty, and it's useful. It's useful. I think I say it's useful. I want someone to read this and be like, there's a depth to this and a thought to this that I've never seen anywhere else about this topic. And I want them to remember the brand, because if we deliver that over and over again, they're going to see a Growth Lab link every time and know they need to pour themselves a coffee, sit down, and they're ready for something that's going to be truly useful and meaningful. But to your point, I don't think that's the goal of a lot of these sites, and that's why things get samey.
Right. Right. And part of the problem here is that, again, we have this incentive structure which is broken, where people share things on social without reading them. People are populating each other's feeds with content they haven't even read. And I think we've broken this idea of, oh, well, people are sharing it, they must like it. Or such and such shared it, they must like it.
Right.
And actually what we mean is they're identifying with the content. They want to identify with somebody
who
likes they think the article is about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how to solve it.
Well, I think it's two things. One, there's too few distribution mechanisms, so the rules that make something successful are pretty similar, internet-wide. But, like, if you think about in the early blogosphere, like, even when, like, zines were a thing, like, or GeoCities, like, there was weirdness because you were rewarded by standing out, and you weren't all thrown into the same distribution arena. Like, people had to find you and remember you and it had to burn in their brain. And right now, that's not how people find stuff.
Right.
They find stuff in the same blue and white text boxes of Twitter, Facebook. So I think that's what collapses everything.
And in fact, the algorithms themselves, one could argue, probably help to standardize everything.
Right. So again,
if, when you try and stand out, the thing that is distinct doesn't work by the algorithms, because the algorithms know that it's unusual and likely not good.
Yeah. We need to reward weirdness more.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to close this episode with a segment we are calling Things We Like, Things We Think Are Good.
We might call it something else.
Yes. So the thing I like is Substack, substack.com. So a problem with bad content is it has bad business incentives, and one of the best business incentives for good content is having the readers and customers actually pay directly for it rather than through advertising. But if you're a publisher, this is super hard to set up. You need WordPress, 9,000 plugins, and you need to be both good at writing and tech. So Substack is kind of like the Shopify for indie publishers, giving them a single stack of tech to let them spin up their own subscription sites and charge. Their first publisher is Cynicism, which is like a very popular newsletter on China. And they hope to roll out more publishers, and I'm really excited, and I hope there's a small army of tiny publishers that end up charging directly for their content as a result of this.
I'm 100% behind you, Sean. I love subscribing to Stratechery, which, you know, Ben Thompson was kind of almost the pioneer of this
right.
one-man self-published thing. And yeah. Now Substack is kind of standardizing the stack, which I think is super useful. And yeah, I'm excited to see what they build.
Give me your thing.
My thing of the week is a tiny letter. It's called Dark Matter. And aside from having a very cool name, it's from a guy called Ian Fitzpatrick. It's kind of hard to describe, as many tiny letters are, which is a good thing. It's a kind of systems thinking, internet rabbit hole-esque thing. They're not that long, which is nice, so they don't feel like a big commitment in your inbox, but I always find stuff in those newsletters that intrigue me. And I feel like, you know, reading between the lines, I feel like Ian thinks about some of these things similarly to how I do,
right.
Which is always...
it's always validating.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we were talking about weird. It's kind of funny. Tiny letter encourages the weird.
And oh,
I don't know,
totally.
I don't know why. Like, that's a conversation for another day. But anyway, that's our experimental episode one. So The Malcontents is a podcast about content. If you liked this content, please tell Tom or I on Twitter. I am at Sean Blanda.
I am at Tom Critchlow.
And we hope you're content with this content about content.
This is The Malcontent. See you next time.
Bye.